thank you everybody for joining us today. I'm really thrilled to be talking with James from Blue Novus. James and I have gotten the chance to know each other over the past few weeks, and I know that everyone will be able to have a lot of strong takeaways from our conversation today, because James really is an expert in creating a deep connection with both patients and family members from the point of admission all the way through. So thanks again, James. I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you. I'm very thrilled to be here.
Well, James, today what I wanted to do was to really talk about the role that families play in getting their son or daughter or spouse or loved one into treatment. I know you have a lot of experience in this space. I wanted to start by having you walk us through what families are really feeling when they call into a treatment program.
Well, so in my experience, and maybe to just give a little bit of context to that, I was the marketing director for nearly 3 years for a residential treatment facility. And prior to that, I was an entrepreneur and someone who struggled fiercely with addiction myself, taking a lot of phone calls and working with a lot of families over the years. Is that there's this big confusion about where to even turn. So as families are looking at what to do when they don't know what to do, trust just seems to emerge as one of the biggest pieces that we as providers, as professionals need to address.
Well, James, you know, one of the things you mentioned earlier was this fact of trust. And you know, when you get a family member on the phone, in your experience, you know, how long do you have to really begin to establish a level of trust and connection with that family member?
In my experience, you're only getting one phone call to do that because they are going to call around. I don't know the exact numbers or the analytics. There are certainly some of the bigger marketing groups out there that have that data. But in personal experience and in those conversations, what I have understood is that you really just have that first phone call to establish at least some type of connection with them. And so with that being said, the first question you don't ask is, what is your insurance? Time and time again, as I talk with colleagues and people in the industry, all too many times we're trying to pre-qualify somebody from the onset rather than establishing some form of connection and trust.
From your experience and your conversations from being working directly with families for a number of years, you know, what do you think families are needing the most when they make the call?
I think they immediately need to have some confidence that you are going to be taking care of them, that you are a trustworthy source that they can rely on, that you are not going to be brokering them, that you are not going to be just pushing them through a system. Taking the time to really understand their situation. And I know many of the people listening, you've heard the same stories again and again. I understand that. But every case is a little bit different. And every case deserves your full attention to really deeply understand where they're coming from. Here's what I've learned. Everyone wants to feel heard. They want to be reminded that they matter. And asking them for their insurance or pre-qualifying them before you really understand who they are and what's their biggest concern. You know, if you were to take a step back and just ponder on the loved one that's calling on behalf of someone who's struggling with addiction, you know, their motivation could be very different from each other. It's not, you know, one of the biggest misunderstandings I think people have is that they're calling you because they need to put their loved one into treatment. Or if it's the person themselves calling, that they're looking for treatment. And it's, whether it's a family member or the loved one, that's the last thing they want to be doing. But because of circumstances, because of the chaos, they are calling you because they're hurting. And so they are dying for connection. They matter something. And so instilling that hope and providing them with some very heartfelt professional support is really what they need. It's not about putting them in a bed. I mean, that's going to be a result of you doing the right thing and taking care of them and hearing them. And if you were to really think about it, you know, a lot of times I think we fall into this programmatic kind of answering of phones. And so you know, we want to tell them about how great the facility is and that we provide EMDR or whatever those services are that maybe allow you to stand out from some of your, in quotation marks, competition. But you know what? They can't touch that. They can't feel that. When there's only one thing that will make a difference, and it's how do they feel when they're on the phone with you?
A lot of things you spoke about today are not about the programs and the treatment centers talking about how great their programs are, but it really is about listening to these family members. I know one of the things that you are a firm believer in is this idea of innate listening. For those people who may not be familiar with this concept of innateness listening, can you begin to break that down and share the importance of innate listening and how you've used that to be successful with the programs you've worked with?
Thank you. So innate listening is a term that I don't know if I invented it, but I think I may have as far as just the term itself. I used to use the term deep listening, but so many times people had a sense that they thought they knew what that meant. And so I with further research and discussion and just kind of looking at what I was really teaching, I came up with this idea of innate listening for a couple of reasons. One, I wanted it to catch you off guard. I wanted you to go, gosh, I don't think I've heard of that term before. So I wanted to get people's attention by using that terminology. But secondly, you know, the word innate is a word, you know, on its own is defined as natural or automatic or something that just happens. And so you may be asking yourself, well, you know, if there are steps to this idea of innate listening, how do you call it that? Well, let me explain. Innate listening really has just a few different steps and is a massive differentiator when you're talking about building trust and being able to instill confidence in the person that you're working with. The first step of innate listening, ironically, has nothing to do with listening at all. It has everything to do with seeing. And what I mean by that is it's about being present. It's not about having an end goal in mind. It's not about assessing. It's not about anything other than just being right here, right now. And we as human beings have this ability to sense when somebody is paying full attention. We have this deeper sense of connecting with people without any words being said whatsoever. And we can do that on a phone call. We can do that in person, obviously. But this idea of being present, meaning I'm not thinking about the past. I'm not projecting and trying to control the conversation. I'm not trying to lead you down any certain path. I'm right here. I'm right now. And I'm giving you my full attention. People will sense that. And if I were to take that even a step further, most people that struggle with drug and alcohol addiction are doing so because they're trying to fix a feeling. They have in some way, whether it's biological, physiological, whatever, people have this that struggle with addiction. They're just always trying to fix those feelings of inadequacy or shame or guilt or whatever the case may be. They have a deeper sense of picking up on that stuff. And if you don't believe me, just check your own experience with that. That sense of connection, I think that people who struggle with addiction have a heightened sense of people connecting with them. And so you can make an immediate impact just by being present. The next piece that I would share is to let go of any judgment, let go of any outcome.
I imagine it's really hard for an admissions rep who maybe has had a lot of experience and they've been doing things a certain way for a number of years. It must be really challenging for them to kind of take a step back and to try a new approach. What advice would you give, you know, the admissions team about ways just to begin to practice innate listening when that may not be something they have done in the past or be familiar with?
Here's the good news that this is super practical. It's more about practicing it from a place of awareness than anything else. So you don't need to go study up on this, folks. One of the things that I've noticed is the more that you can create that space, what happens is all of a sudden they start to share even more and they go even deeper. And time again, when I practice this, what I have witnessed is people will feel a deeper connection because they themselves go deeper into the conversation. They allow themselves to be more vulnerable because they feel safe. And when they feel safe, you build trust. And when you build trust, you become an indispensable resource.
building that firm foundation and becoming a trusted, credible resource is we know is important. Helping to become a resource that they can, you know, continually reach back out to, we know is important. From your experience, how should treatment programs be following up with families after that first call? What are some things that you have seen have worked well in the past in terms of staying engaged with families even after that initial phone call?
I would share with you this, that you having an attitude of being an ultimate resource to just helping that person no matter what will automatically align you with wanting to follow up with that family, putting them into a facility. Maybe your facility isn't the right one. Maybe you don't take that insurance in particular and you want to help them because they don't have the resources to come to you. All of those pieces essentially come automatically when you shift your mindset from a place of, I've got to fill my beds, to I just want to help. They're going to do anything they can to come to you because they're going to feel something different with you. They're going to feel like they matter with you and not just another number or a goal or a bed to fill. There's this shift that happens. And again, that's where the trust happens. That's when you will just innately, you know, want to check up with people and not just go, well, you know, I know they're probably got Medicaid and so they need to go there or whatever. You know, take this to the ultimate level of doing the right thing and taking care of the person that had the courage to reach out to you, because you don't know, that one phone call may be the biggest difference maker for saving a life. And that's why we got in this industry in the first place.
Talk a bit about some of the innovative and creative ways that some of your customers have engaged with families. You know, what have you seen that's working really, really well that you think other treatment programs could incorporate into how they are interacting with family members?
Yeah, so I think the more that we can provide education and support on an ongoing basis with family members makes a tremendous difference. I happen to live just outside of Park City, Utah, and you know, if you know Utah at all, a couple of things. There are a lot of treatment facilities in this state. But in Salt Lake, one of the things that I did with some of our clients was we began putting on just family education conferences or webinars or, you know, in-person symposiums. And what we saw from that is we were getting people that just needed more answers or they just wanted to be around other people. And as much as a lot of the different 12-step programs that are out there, a lot of times people just want to ask questions. And so I love support groups. I also love to provide resources to family members. And so if you're considering wanting to provide a bigger resource for your clients' families, one of the things that I would encourage you to do is start, you know, getting out in the community, be on the ground more and provide your expertise. I mean, you are an expert in this field. Getting out there in the community more and providing this type of education, I think will automatically translate into more admissions for you.
No, absolutely. James, the feedback you've given today and the advice and resources you've shared, I know are going to be really helpful for marketing teams and admissions teams who are really trying to establish themselves as trusted and incredible resources. I know clearly you have a lot of experience in this space and you started a company called Blue Novus. I'd love for you just to take a few minutes to share about Blue Novus and, you know, what your mission is behind the company.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, as I was doing marketing and admissions with a residential treatment facility, you know, this Blue Novus just kind of emerged out of my desire. And I do work with my wife, Alicia. It came out of our desire to help more people and provide a bigger influence into this industry. And you know, let's talk about the obvious here that not everybody is working in integrity and is ethical. Hence the patient brokering and some of the things that are going on that have now caused Congress to subpoena many facilities. And that was something that I was deeply passionate about, is cleaning up what was going on. Well, you know, we can all throw around this beautiful word, you know, be ethical and ethics and all of that, but it's not going to drive change. What's going to drive change is ROI. If I can show you that doing the right thing will actually make you more money, you're more inclined to use that strategy or that approach or that mindset than you would be if I just said, well, you know, you need to be ethical. The only other way that that happens is when Congress comes in and changes the laws and clinches down. Why not just do the right thing and create a better ROI before the government comes in and polices this even further? So that was underneath everything is part of the reason that Blue Novus came about is I wanted to see us do better. I wanted to see an industry that was more ethical, but I also wanted to see those families and individuals that were struggling that are in the most vulnerable place you can imagine being treated more humanely. I know that sounds crazy, but that was really kind of what started this all. Our mission really is to help individuals, families, and companies navigate the challenges of drug and alcohol addiction. That's our mission statement. That's just who we are. And we do that through various, you know, approaches, whether that's consulting, training. I have the pleasure of doing a lot of speaking around the country.
Now, it's really powerful, James. Well, I really appreciate the feedback and the guidance you've given today. Your heart and your passion and your mission with Blue Novus, everybody can feel that. So thank you for everything you're doing for this industry and everything you're doing for families. I know it's making a real difference. Well, thanks again, James, for your time today. And I really appreciated you sharing this information.
Thank you. I certainly appreciated the invitation. And please, please, please stay connected.